Welcome to the More Than Fitness Podcast.
Man, I just realized this is the first time I've talked this morning. I realized I got my raspy weekend.
I still got the morning voice.
I've got my raspy weekend voice going on from celebrating some Wildcat victories.
I saw that. How was the game?
It was fun, man. Don't worry. We'll get into a formal introduction here in a second. But I know I look like the dude who gives a shit about sports, but I really don't care much about sports. What I really love is hanging out with my friends and being in an environment like that. I still, you know, I played football. I love going to the football games and stuff, and it's a great environment. But I don't care as much. But it's just more fun whenever our team is winning. So whenever Kentucky is winning, and so that's exciting. But I've been with my friends. I've been laughing all weekend. Probably drank too much bourbon, but I'm feeling good. How are you feeling, man?
Good. I got no complaints. I'm just coming back from a close to 3-week cross-country road trip. So I was in the car like 10 to 12 plus hours a day, pretty much every other day for, I want to say most of September, but a good chunk of it. So even though I've been back for a couple of days, still a little lingering fatigue, but all good.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. And I want to dive into some of that, but real quick, Sam Forget.
You got it.
Dude. Listen, I remember that from last time, but now for some reason, now every time I think of it, do you ever hear people call Target?
Yes. Actually, I have a family member who worked there for a little while who had to deal with so many bad jokes with that. Like, oh, Forget working at Target. And every time I get a last name joke, it's usually some variation of like, I won't forget your name. Like, it's very creative. You're the first person who's ever said that to me. You should be very proud of yourself. So yes, I am very familiar with Target, of course.
That's amazing. Yeah, I didn't know how familiar that was. I know I've heard some people say it, but yeah, don't worry. I won't. I had to point it out, but don't worry, we won't go down that rabbit hole. But yeah, Sam Forget, real quick, just for the cats who don't know you, just whenever you meet somebody new and you tell them what you do, what do you say?
Simplest version, I would say an online nutrition coach, slightly expanded, owner of Hercules Performance, fat loss specialist. I do both one-on-one and group coaching programs. Again, specifically for people with some sort of body transformation goal.
Yeah. Okay. Real quick. I want to know, and we don't have to get deep into the backstory, but where did the Hercules Performance come from? I love it, but I want to know what's the quick rundown on that?
Well, it's funny. That kind of requires us to go into the backstory. I'll give like the bulleted version.
Okay,
where
sure. That works.
I started actually coaching and training people when I was like 16 or 17 years old, because I got into lifting and like late, not like doing it well or hard by any means, but got into lifting in late elementary, middle school. My dad was an avid weightlifter, so I was always around it. So I just knew like, oh, lifting, that's just what you do. That's what I want to be around. And at the time, middle school, entering high school, I was doing it specifically for sports. My sport was basketball. I wanted to get better at that. And what ended up happening was basically my friend's parents started asking me to train my friends, and then two or three degrees removed from them, and offering to pay for it. So I started training people. Again, I was not good, but I started training people very young. So at that time, it was a no-brainer. Like, I'm going to make you look like Hercules and I'm going to help you perform well, because I like the Greek mythology stuff. And it seemed like this super creative name, which, looking back on it now, half the industry's business names end in either fitness or performance. So it is certainly not. And I like formally registered the business and made it like a legit thing my freshman year of college. And again, at that point, I was still convinced like, I'm going to help people get to the NBA, because it had finally dawned upon me that I was no longer going to the NBA as a 6'1" white guy. Just wasn't happening. So yeah, I was convinced that was the thing. And again, bulleted version here, fast forward to now, I work with regular people who do not have, for the most part, extreme body composition or performance goals, but I'm close to 8 years into the business and just never get around to changing the name. So it is not reflective whatsoever of like who I help and what I do, but my dog's name is Hercules. So I'm wrapped up in that a little bit as well. So I just never changed it.
That's the real short version. You're like, it's just my dog's name. It's Hercules Literally, Performance. Yeah.
Well, I got the dog, well, Hercules and my other dog, Roman, I got them at the time I was starting the business. So I'm like, all right, this is going to be this very on-brand shelter dog. Like, this is my dog Hercules, and I'm going to train people to be big and strong. And again, now that's not what I do work-wise. And my dog Hercules and his brother Roman, I was told they were Rottweiler boxer mixes. So I'm like, I'm going to have these two very big, tough dogs. Turns out they're also part beagle. So they look like a Rottweiler, but they're like the biggest 40-pound or the littlest 40-pound babies in the world. So that's, none of it went according to plan, but all good stuff.
That's amazing, actually. I love that. Okay, so you and again, we'll go through it because I know backstories can get whatever. We can just go around all day long, but I do like to kind of put the pieces together for people sometimes, especially with inflection points and things. But it just sounds interesting that you were kind of in the fitness game really early. It's like, did you know that this was something that you were going to do? Did you go in did you go to college? Did you get like a degree in this stuff? And like, when were you like, hey, I'm going to actually do this as my career full time?
I say it half kidding, half not, when it was around the time when I realized that professional sports were not a thing for me. Mm. So likely later in my life than I'd care to admit, maybe it was like early middle school or something, but because I was around lifting because of my dad, every single day he'd get home from work, he'd head straight to the basement, he'd be deadlifting. He'd do all the old school stuff. So he'd have one of those, I don't know if you've seen him, the headpieces with like chains attached, like a harness.
Oh, for
like
sure.
Direct network. So like, that's what I was around. To me, that was normal. On the other side of things, you know, and what's funny is he couldn't tell you what periodization is or frequency volume intensity. And on the other side of things, my mom, not overly strict, but monitored what was coming in the house. We didn't have like cookies and donuts and soda everywhere. So I was just kind of around people that made it, obviously my immediate family, that made it top of mind, just being reasonably healthy and fit. But my mom couldn't tell you what a macronutrient is. Like, it was just, we tried to make decent choices. So
lots of bro science, just like, hey, just like bro principles.
Yeah. Just like working reasonably hard, minimizing a lot of the process stuff. Like, we had it too. Like, every night when she would come home and the nights she went grocery shopping, we had donuts. I have a twin brother, actually. So what would happen is she'd bring home, you know, Pringles and donuts, and it was whoever got to it first would have all 12 donuts in the full container of Pringles. And
it's hell,
like,
yeah. Hell,
shit, bro. Like, whoever didn't get to it.
It's great.
And I say all this to kind of lead to, there was just no other alternative in my head. Like, I certainly wasn't a suit and tie guy. Like, by anyone who knows me now, you know, get one look at my heavily tattooed hands and knuckles.
Yes. Not on brand. The suits are not on brand with you.
Although, actually, I'll get to this in a minute. I did show up to my first few sessions in a polo, khakis, holding a briefcase, because I thought that's how I had to look, but that's a different story.
Briefcase.
But yeah, around that time when I realized, like, all right, like, I'm not going to the NBA. Just, what do you want to be when you grow up? Something in fitness. I didn't really have the terminology for strength coach versus athletic trainer versus PT versus RD, of course, but I knew it was something in that realm. And then essentially, as I educated myself more and more, probably in high school, started realizing what the differences were between those professions. I actually went to a high school where it was pretty close to a 100% continuation rate to like higher education. Like, so it was no gray area that I was not just gonna stop high school and go work in a gym, which is fine, obviously, for some people. It was college. So I did study exercise science in college. At that time is when I again formalized the business and actually started a traveling service out of necessity. So all throughout high school and early college, I was investing in a ton of equipment, converting my home gym that was already fairly built out with, like, you know, I have power racks, even to this day, power racks, NutriGrip bars, glute ham raises, just things you don't see in home gyms, thinking, well, I'm going to train people here. Come to find out, the home I grew up in was not zoned for that type of business. Uh-huh. So I couldn't legally bring people here without my mother's homeowner's insurance going through the roof or not being covered at all. And since I wanted to do everything legit so I could actually grow the business, I'm like, well, what do I do here? Shit.
Yeah.
That turned into the traveling service where I invested in adjustable dumbbells, a collapsible bench, little bells and whistles, the med ball, the resistance bands. And I would put them in the trunk of my Hyundai Sonata. And whether you were 5 minutes from me or 55 minutes from me, I would drive to your house. I would lug all of that equipment into your house, in your basement, you know, into your kitchen, whatever. And I would actually start training people then.
That's like some COVID shit. That would be a great model with COVID. Yeah.
Like that. And what's funny, you know, fast forward to now in the pandemic, obviously most of the gyms in America shut down. As an aside, that is still the best fitness investment I've ever made. I don't know what I got them for, like several hundred dollars at the time, but my adjustable dumbbells go up to, and I'm not, this isn't affiliate stuff. Like, I'm not, sure. This is power blocks, but
yeah,
0 to 90 pounds in 2.5 pound increments. And I've lived in five cities in the last 4 years. I travel very often. I bring those dumbbells, or at least a portion of those 90 pounds, almost every time in the car to every place I've ever lived. And it has minimized the friction of me actually getting a workout in, whether, again, I am on this cross-country road trip recently, or whether I am bouncing from city to city and haven't signed up to in a gym. So again, as an aside,
yeah,
phenomenal investment. But yeah, I would say like middle school, high school, it just kind of came together. Like, this is what I'll do. And then early college is when I actually figured out the nuts and bolts of how that would happen, which again, initially started as I will show up to your front door in a polo with a briefcase, khakis. That's how I thought you had to show up.
Wow, dude, that's pretty wild. So were you a delinquent at all in high school? Like, you know, I'm all about responsible delinquents, but it's just like,
of course, I know you are
definitely a responsible delinquent. I can tell. But like, looking at the tats and everything, it's just like, if I think like just face value, you know, no, you know, it just is what it is, man. I was just like, this kid was a delinquent in high school for sure.
Not high school. I like tried a little bit of the college life when I got there of like, all right, let's stop being so straight edge all the time.
Yeah.
I was not very good at being a delinquent. So that lasted about 6 months. The first college I went to, I actually transferred to a school closer to back home and started commuting. And that's how I was able to start the service. So I had a very half-assed 6 month delinquent phase. And now I enjoy being social and doing stuff more. And, you know, I've lived in New York, I've lived in Miami, so I've had my fix, but I try to err slightly more on the side of responsible. I have my moments though.
That's good, man. I love it. Good, good. That's great. One of the things I definitely wanted to touch on was, cause I know you were talking about your trip. So you went to the Vigor Ground Summit here recently. Yes. I went to the online one last year. I attended the online one last year because I wanted to go in person. But I know all those people, and I feel like that's very both of our alleys, and I would love to go to that eventually. But real quick, just to give like a rundown, just tell people kind of what that was, and then also kind of like maybe some big takeaways or something, because I'm just interested from my own selfish standpoint, you know?
Yeah, of course. And actually, so Luca Hosovar, who runs this event, I know you know that, started this, I think, a couple of years ago now. And I was supposed to go in person pre-COVID, and I booked the ticket. But I remember as I was booking the ticket, like, this date sounds familiar. Like, I feel like I have something, but it was like the early bird pre-sale thing. So I just sent it. I'm like, I'll figure it out after the fact. Like 3 days later, I was talking to my sister and I realized, oh shit, my sister's getting married that weekend. That's what the date was. Oh. So I immediately had to email Luca and say, look, like, I can't go, man, but I certainly want to go next year. Obviously, fast forward a year, none of us could have predicted that. We have COVID. So I did not attend the virtual one. So me going this year was actually a couple of years overdue.
Wow.
It was a close to a 2 week trip to get out there, which is fun in itself.
You drove?
Yeah, this was the trip actually to get out to the event. So,
From Boston.
Yeah, go ahead,
sorry, from Boston. Yeah. Oh,
so
shit.
I live just south of Boston, figured like no better time to do it. Like, I'm in between leases right now. My wife runs an online business, and the cross country trip was actually her birthday's in August, so it was actually like a surprise gift to her. She thought I was flying solo out to this trip and I was just going to do the conference and come home. But in her birthday in August, I had mapped out like this little, I actually like a lot of artsy crafty stuff. So I had mapped out like this little itinerary with like photos and images of what we would do in each city along the way. Wow. I actually thought about Kentucky, by the way. I should have connected.
Yeah, absolutely. If you ever decide to go on a way too fucking long road trip again, yeah.
I don't doubt we will.
Let me know.
Yeah, so that was the trip to get out there, and then Seattle was the main portion that I was there for about a week, because that's obviously where Lucas gym is. And I signed up for like the VIP ticket, which kind of get you access to like the little mini events before and after. And like the biggest thing, like there were certainly lots of specific takeaways, although the conference was largely geared toward like brick and mortar gym owners. There was online stuff for sure, but brick and mortar, gym owners, personal trainers, that kind of stuff. My thing was, I didn't realize how much I missed that in-person connection. Like, you always think you're fine when you go an extended period of time without it. And then you're in it and you're like, oh my God, I need to remember this the next time there's a gap without it. It's kind of like if you're being a little antisocial, staying in your shell, and then somebody convinces you to go to a party and you you know, create this monster in your head that it's going to be terrible. And then you're there. You're like, oh my God, this is worth it. I need to do this more.
Yes.
So for me, again, like anybody coming off of the pandemic, I haven't been on like the in-person conference scene in a while. So again, there were lots of takeaways, specific strategies. Luca is unreal when it comes to over-delivering, creating culture, all that. But I left, you know, having met some internet friends, you know, like yourself, like we've never connected in person. So there were a lot of those scenarios where I actually got to be like, hey, it's nice to meet you in person.
Yeah.
Those are great people I'd never met before. Got to connect with a lot of the speakers, which is always awesome and inspiring to see people performing at that level. So that was the big thing, is that energy of like, wow, these people are doing cool stuff. What can I do a little bit differently now?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely spot on about that. I think I talked about that. I probably talked about it with a few people, but it's kind of like you don't realize, like with COVID, you didn't realize what you were missing with that in-person aspect. And then whenever you do go and you hang out with people, you're just like, oh my God, like this is absolutely what I've been needing and what I've been missing. And it's just, I think it's also probably a sentiment to starting up the podcast and things too. It's like, I know that we're Zooming right now, but even this during COVID, and I know just trying to cultivate these friendships with specifically like people in our space, having Zoom calls occasionally, like not on air, right? And just talking with people just through Zoom. I never feel more energized than after a podcast or after one of these Zooms. But of course, in person, that's amplified even more. You know?
Oh, it's crazy. And I had the opportunity to work out with some of like the really top trainers at this. I snuck off toward the end of, I guess it would have been day three. And I thought I'd been like training hard with my little at-home workouts and stuff, but it's mostly solo, mostly at home. So a lot of times, like when you're moving from the couch to your basement gym, or in some cases, like if you're in an apartment, from one side of your living room to the other, there's only so much you can really emotionally get up for of like, I'm totally going to crush these box squats on this couch. Like,
yeah,
like you can do it. You can add the pauses and the eccentrics and stuff, but it's still an at-home workout and those are fine and they get the job done. But here I am in, you know, Luca's facility, which is one of the best in the country, with tons of people that, you know, I really pull from energy-wise, that I look up to professionally in a lot of ways. It was an environment where, and I'm sure you've experienced this on the flip side, where there are certain people, unfortunately, if you train hard around them, they're like, oh, look at this tough guy, or who does he think he is?
Sure.
Like, they don't put you in a place where you feel like it's okay to go all out or push yourself. These people were the opposite. You know, I was touching weights I haven't touched since like pre-pandemic, probably way too heavy. I'm still recovering like 2 weeks later from that workout.
Yeah.
But it's like, let's get it, Sam. Like, let's go after it. You got this. And I'm like, oh my God. And after the workout, like I was fried, but I forgot I had that dial that I could turn up to until, again, it's a social environment thing. I'm so big on environment, and I kind of divide them up into social, digital, and physical, which maybe we can talk about after, but
yeah,
the social environment component there, I'm like, oh my God, like the second I get home, people that I've been lazy about reaching out to that are an hour away or an hour and a half away, it's worth the drive. Go connect with that person. You're going to tap into something a little bit deeper. That was a game changer, just kind of being reignited by those people.
Yeah, that is something that I wanted to touch on because like you said, internet friends and things. I like, especially being here in Kentucky, you know, I have all of my childhood friends here and they're not, you know, they have nothing to do with fitness or whatever. And so those are my quote unquote like normal friends and mm-hmm. who just, you know, they have different jobs, things like that. And then I have internet friends, right? Like you and other people in the industry and things. I think it is important to have both. Do you have a balance like that of maybe like people that you have in just your immediate circle, like locally, where maybe they aren't in fitness and things, and then you also have internet friends? What I'm thinking is like, for the audience, like how can they maybe cultivate some of these things? Of course, they can go to some of these in-person events, but it's just like, how can you cultivate this environment when maybe, you know, you're in the middle of a small town or something? And like you said, just the fact that you like try hard or something, or maybe that you want to go somewhere different or things like that, like how to break that mold, you know?
Of course. One of the most important things I ever learned, like friendship, relationship-wise, was actually in like, I think it was a high school morality class. So seemingly out in left field. But one of the things that she went over, it was the first time I'd ever heard of this, is that different friends serve different purposes, and not in like a transactional way where like we're trying to extract things from people. But you can have a friendship of convenience. It's just maybe you call somebody a friend in your hometown because you played football with them growing up. And if you move to Alaska, there's a good chance you'll never see them again. And a lot of people get really torn up about stuff like that. And there are, you know, there's friends of convenience, there's friends of proximity, there's friends, you know, career-wise, like they're almost like different categories. But again, that takeaway lesson I got from this teacher was that it's okay for it to be that and nothing more. You don't have to stress yourself out to have every connection be like the world's deepest thing, or, you know, this person doesn't reach out enough, or, well, I don't know if they visit me if I move to Florida. That's okay. Like, you can have a mutually beneficial relationship that serves its purpose. That's either, you know, just maybe somebody you see at the gym often, that every time you show up, you're like, Amy, what's going on? What do you got today? Legs? Great. High five.
Yeah.
Keep it moving.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is, you know, working online, you do have friends like that, that are, I want to say, surface level, or, you know, just depends on whether or not you're interacting content wise versus friends maybe you see not as often in your hometown.
Circumstantial. It's kind of circumstantial, you know?
Exactly. That's a great word for it.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I was kind of trying to think of that word.
Got you. Got you.
Circumstantial.
Yeah.
But that it's okay, because I think that takes a huge weight off your shoulders to feel like everybody needs to be this super deep connection. And there are people I connected with at this conference that, like, that's what it was. Hey, I saw you last year at the conference. How you been? And that's fine. And that's a very like net positive interaction for both of us. And then there are obviously friends that selectively you go way deeper on in terms of how to find those people that you can go deeper on that do push you, even if it's from across the country or, you know, ideally in person. Investing to some degree, because there are going to be scenarios, and I don't just mean money, because there's an expression, I know you know Mike Vacanti, he always says, yeah, there are other currencies besides cash. So looking at, I'm not just saying invest in like some sort of meetup group or, you know, a conference across the country like this, you know, your time, your mental energy, your bandwidth, your effort, writing somebody a handwritten note. Like, I'm generally a big believer that you'll get exactly, you know, what you put into the relationship development space. So
yeah,
if you're, you know, living in, you know, rural Kentucky and unfortunately don't have a great network around you in terms of people who do push you to, you know, grow your business or develop professionally, it's highly unlikely. Cool if it happens, highly unlikely that someone's going to knock on the door and say, I'm going to be your best friend, or we're going to motivate each other.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's right.
Another expression I like, or kind of thought process, is like, look at your bank account. Like your bank statement, specifically in your calendar, that'll tell you your priorities. So if you're somebody who says, I want a better network, I want people who push me, look at where you've been spending your time in the last 30 days. Look at how you've been investing your resources. Do they lend themselves to network development, deeper relationships? If that's not the case, again, you just look to invest those a little more wisely, whether it is a local meetup group, even if it's like local dodgeball. Again, it doesn't have to be that deep, just something that gives you a little lift, whether it is connecting with more people online, whether it is, you know, in the workplace, asking people to meet outside of work, whether it is a Zoom call. But I always like to align those actions, expectations. So if you're telling me you want to grow your network, and not just professionally, but just, you know, things that motivate you personally, do your actions lend themselves to that? If not, let's do an audit and then pivot a little bit.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that's beautifully said. I think the whole summation of that is like, you have to make an effort. Like, you have to make an, especially if it's not, if you're not in New York City, if you're not in Boston, if you're not in these places where kind of serendipity is just more casual, like it just happens more frequently, then you kind of have to create that serendipity and luck and things through, luckily, through the internet and social media. I think now is the better, like the best time ever. And I think, of course, there's pros and cons of social media and of the internet, but I think connecting with people and creating this whole internet utopia, like, you can use that as a resource, as a very powerful resource to connect with these people. And so I really like that. And what, on the point of your teacher telling you that about different types of friends, I heard, I don't remember who it was. And like you said, it's not transactional, but they said that you have like three types, it's good to have three different types of friends. And so you have friends who are above you, quote unquote, right? Who are there to inspire you, right? These are people that are going to lift you up. Jay Ferrugia, right? Luca Hosevar, like these types of people who you look up to, you're inspired by. That's good, because they're going to help pull you up, right? And then you have people who are on like the quote unquote same level as you, so that you can kind of brainstorm together, you can collaborate, you can kind of compare and see where things are, see maybe where you need to improve or where you're lacking in things, right? And you can work together as a team to both try and get to that next level. But then you can also have people who are quote unquote below you, right? That maybe need that hand, right? That you need to be that person that helps them up, right? You have people who are below you, who you are that person for them, that they are inspired by, that you can help lift them up, right? And I think that having those three kind of keep you grounded, but they're all necessary to kind of keep in perspective and to keep top of mind, you know?
And I like how those are all mutually beneficial, like right. Surface level. If we say, oh, and obviously we're saying people beneath us very loosely here. Not
of course, not as human beings. Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
But how that's so mutually beneficial where say there's somebody, maybe like in this case, let's say a younger trainer who's reaching out to us that we don't know as well, who's coming up in the industry or something. And we kind of lift them up somehow, either making a connection or, you know, having a conversation, whatever. We're doing one, the same thing that somebody above us is doing for us. And in terms of that, you know, the mutual benefits, we're becoming a better leader, a better educator, you know, ideally a better role model in some capacity. That person is now learning how to do the same thing and eventually going to be in a position where they can pass it on the same way that somebody did for us. So I like with one, I've never heard that. I love how you broke that down, but how it's mutually beneficial and non-transactional and non just like cut and dry in every direction. Like everybody stands to benefit when the effort and mutual respect is there.
Exactly. Okay. How are you with peer pressure? I feel like you're probably pretty good with peer pressure, just given the branding, you know, with everything. You got fucking tattoos. It's just like, you seem like you do what you want to do. And I really like that. But I think that one of the biggest things with kind of cultivating these friendships or just like being in a group of people who maybe like they don't have the same mindset as you and things, and maybe they're not trying to aspire and whatever. It's just like, and I have nothing against, if those people are happy and they're doing what they want to do, I think there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But maybe you kind of want that type of thing. So it's just like, how have you maybe dealt with peer pressure where you're maybe like, maybe I should stay local or something like that and not do these things? Or like, have you always kind of had that, or have you developed that through confidence building or reading books or being around people or anything like that?
I have a few thoughts on this. This is a phenomenal question.
Okay.
First thing that comes to mind is a concept called role lock. I'm not sure if you've heard of that before.
Mm-mm.
You probably have. It's not the term for it. It's the idea that if you're in your hometown, obviously where you grew up, around the people you grew up with, they have an idea of maybe like Matt's the meathead who's no fun, or maybe Matt's the party guy, and you get stuck in this. And anytime you try to break away from that inadvertently, it's not always malicious, people try to bring you back down. They like, it makes them uncomfortable, maybe because of your growth, like obviously insecurities are present. So the role lock is, I'm going to lock you into this role that I've created for you in my head. You see this a lot in family dynamics. You see this a lot in romantic relationships and a lot in friendships. So although I've generally been pretty solid at like not really caring clearly what people think, or, yeah, you know, when it comes to overcoming peer pressure, I did grow up as the very serious, very almost angry type guy, not like explosive anger, like starting fights with people. But if you saw me anywhere, there was a good chance my arms are folded. I looked pissed about something, probably nothing, but I looked pissed about something.
Chip on your shoulder. Sorry to cut you off.
For like no real reason. I don't know if I was just like a wannabe gangster growing up, where, you know, I listened to hip hop, played basketball, mean mug everyone.
Just I feel it. I like it.
Yeah. Just like a little hot shot. I'm like, sure, all right, dude. And like, so that's how I was growing up. And then I get a little bit older, I get into the industry. I'd like to think I matured a little bit, and I don't want to be this anymore. I want to leave that serious self-proclaimed introverted guy behind. I want to be social. I want to be upbeat. I want to be the guy who's out and brings energy. But when I started to do anything that even resembled that, it'd be like, well, you're not the funny guy. You're not the guy who jokes around like, oh, ho, ho, like, look who decided to do X, Y, and Z today. So it actually took me, this wasn't the initial incentive for it, but it actually took a radical environment shift where I moved from my suburb in the middle of nowhere, Massachusetts, to South Beach, Miami for a year, for me to actually have the opportunity to, like, nobody knew me there. I show up. For all they know, I'm just like this goofy goober all the time. Actually bringing back Jay Ferrugia, per the advice of Jay, I signed up for an improv class. And for a guy who walked around with his arms crossed, angry at the world, for me to get on stage and immediately be challenged by my teacher, like, I want you to play the role of a girl, of a dog, of a child. I want you to be high pitched. I want you to be happy this whole scene. It was terrifying. But again, nobody there knew me as that guy. So I had the opportunity to totally break out of that. And what was funny is I didn't go back to Massachusetts where I grew up for maybe 7 or 8 months. And then when I did, I'd almost forgotten about this role lock scenario until I told some of the people I grew up with, like, oh, I'm actually doing improv now, instantly cut off, but you're not funny. I'm like, holy shit. Like, I didn't realize how much that was stopping me from doing different things, the things I wanted to do. Even like, I mean, you know this, like I'm covered in tattoos. I have a bunch of piercings. These probably aren't things I would have done unless I got out of that role lock, changed my environment. Because not only was I the serious guy, I can't picture you with tattoos. Why would you get earrings? So it took this radical physical environment shift for me to have the opportunity. Now, I know not everybody obviously has, whether it's the means or the, you know, the logistical opportunity to move across the country and just start fresh. But you can even do a bit of a social audit. Because again, I break things up. You have your social, physical, digital environments. Is my current social environment putting me in a position where I am constantly having to deal with peer pressure and role lock? If so, I'm not saying ask your childhood friends, but maybe go something abundance-based where on top of those friends that maybe you moderate the environments and frequency in which you see them, you look to connect with people who do put you in a position to bring you up a little bit more and not stick you into the specific role of, you know, to bring it back to fitness for a second. Maybe you grew up and you weren't super healthy and you didn't always make good food choices. Now you're making better ones and people are pulling you back in. Like, what? You don't get a cheat day? Can you live a little for once? Like, we all experience that. I'm not saying disown your family. I'm not saying never go out to eat with your friends, but maybe you can connect with somebody at the gym who wouldn't mind going to a salad bar and they don't think it's a big deal where they're going to give you a hard time about it. So again, not always subtraction based, because I know that's logistically challenging, but maybe adding those people, auditing that and doing something to put more of those people in your life where you don't have to experience that role lock. You can branch out, whether it is in the health and fitness front, business, general personal development, and kind of operate how you want to, where you're not always in a position to deal with that.
Yeah. I fucking love that, dude. I really do. Cause I think a lot of people need to hear it. And I also think, cause I agree, like logistically, whatever, I understand sometimes scenarios are what they are, but also it's like, you can still think like maybe 5 years ahead of now. You know what I'm saying? Like there, I think it's also good to not kind of pigeonhole yourself or trap yourself into this thinking of like, oh, I'm just stuck here because of X, Y, and Z. I think it's just kind of like making sure you check out all your options, things that are possible within the next few years. And I think that's really exciting also to kind of plan for and to look forward to and things like that, because it could absolutely be necessary. It's like, dude, as cliche as it is or whatever, it's like, dude, you got one fucking life. It's just like, you don't want to look back and be like, oh, well, what if I did, make this change and move to this different place or something like that. And my whole life could have been different. And I was actually just talking about this with my best friend, what you said about kind of being a whole different person whenever you go to a new place. Cause he's been born and raised in Kentucky, and he was talking about for his job, he might have to move, for maybe just a couple of years to a new place. And of course, you know, he was talking with me where I lived in New York last year and I moved away from Kentucky. And I was like, dude, one of the coolest things about moving to a new place is that you can be whoever you want to be. And you don't have, like you said, all of these invisible scripts or identities and things that other people kind of see you as. And you can go to this different city and you can be exactly who you want to be and exactly like who you think you could be or should be or anything like that. And I think it's just really interesting to not have that pressure of anybody or just a blank slate. And I think that's one of the biggest things, like the biggest areas of growth you can have for moving somewhere. And then, I mean, what it is, it's the hero's journey, right? Kind of. Yeah. You're in the hometown, then you go off, you go on the adventure, you come back and you kind of share what you learned. So yeah, I think that's, I love that. I really love that message, man.
If I can add one more thing to,
of course.
Let's say somebody is planning 3 to 5 years. I'd like to, you know, create an opportunity where I can break out of these shackles that I kind of have in myself right now. There's still shit you can do between now and then. It doesn't mean you have to stay stuck in your box and your circle between now and then. And I think one of the most overlooked strategies is having very difficult but necessary conversations with the people that may be holding you back, because as we've now both mentioned, it's typically subconscious and not purposely malicious. It's right. Not okay, but let's just use the eating out example, because I have this come up with my clients a lot. You know, you hire me, you're trying to eat a little bit healthier, you go out to eat, your family's not used to that. Maybe it's like an old school Italian family and they're actually offended that you're not having more pasta. They're like, seriously, your grandmother made this for you. Like, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. It doesn't, again, that's not coming from a bad place. They're not sitting here saying, you know, I want Matt to stay out of shape and unhealthy forever. But at that point, it becomes your responsibility to have the conversation with them, as difficult as it is. And I like to, you know, understandably people resist this, but I like to kind of paint the picture of, you can have this one really hard conversation and likely one or two other ones after to reinforce it. or you can deal with like little bad shit constantly for years and years on end. And it's very simple. The main thing that I'd want anybody to do when having this conversation is to not put the other person's back against the wall, to not make them feel attacked, to not put them in a position where they feel like they have to defend themselves. So I always challenge people to highlight that person's best traits, even if you're selling it a little bit, where I can pull you aside and say, hey, Matt, you know, earlier today when you were saying that I should have that second helping of pasta, I know that's because you're such a good friend. You want to make sure I'm having a good time. You want to make sure I'm taken care of. But the best way that you can support me as my friend right now is actually by not putting me in a position to have to say no. And then you can almost self-deprecate. You can be like, oh, because my willpower is not great. Can I count on you? And now you've effectively put that person in a position. They don't feel like they have to be defensive. You've now put them on a pedestal of like, I know it's because you're a great friend or you just want to see me enjoy my night. And you've said like, I can count on you, right? Like you're dependable, you're supportive, you're kind, right? And you're implying that anything else, any ongoing peer pressure or comments is anything, but people want to fill those shoes. They're like, oh shit, Matt thinks I'm this. Yeah, yeah, dude, I got you. And it might take again, a couple more conversations where, you know, hey, remember that conversation? Oh yeah, yeah, no, I got you. Just want to make sure you're good. And then you can move on from there. And that's a scary conversation at first, but it makes your life a lot easier when you're willing to have it. And you can kind of weed out who the people are who truly care about you and the people who, I don't say don't care, but will often put their insecurities over your comfort level. So it allows you to further audit your social circle.
Right. I mean, it's just, I love that too. It's just like you, it's boundaries, you know, like you have to establish these boundaries, and as hard as they are, it's just like you said, you can make these 1, 2, 3 couple hard conversations, these couple decisions. And then I feel like you're both, it's kind of like whenever you're in a relationship, right? Like with a romantic partner, the tough conversations, they're tough, but it's like, how do you feel after them? It's almost always like, as long as you come to a resolution, both, you feel closer than ever, right? You feel like, hey, we went through this trial and tribulation together and we figured it out. And now we can both be happy again. Like, and there's not built up resentment, because that's what ends up happening if you're the person who constantly lets them kind of talk you into breaking your promises to yourself. Then you start resenting that person and then putting the blame on them and things. But it's just like, no, you, like you said, you have to take that responsibility, and you have, like, it's because it's going to be hard either way, but it's just kind of like, choose your hard, right? With the Mark Manson, sure. Choose your pain. Which one do you want? And it is definitely hard, but also again, it's just like, it's up to you to draw those boundaries. And then, like you said, you're going to weed out some of those, you're going to weed out some of those people, or at least make people reflect on themselves. Because it's like, if you politely, especially how you just said, which is magic, it's like, if you say it like that, and then they don't respond positively, it's like, dude, it's just like, that's on them, right? It's like, that's on them, man. That's all. And that's all you can do. And then it's just like, but do you have to, do what you want to do, right? You have to draw those boundaries. And then I think most people, you would be surprised after you call them out on it. Cause again, like you said, subconsciously, they don't realize it. And then whenever they realize it, they're like, oh yeah, sorry about that. Like, whatever. And then maybe eventually then they come asking for you for like, hey, I you know, I need help with this or whatever. And I think that's great advice, man. I think it's really great advice.
Like you said, it opens the door for them to maybe turn to you in a way that they didn't think was possible. Talk about another mutually beneficial dynamic. Now you have a weight off your shoulders because you broke the ice and had the conversation. They're like, oh, I didn't realize I was doing that. Where else can I be better? And then they can push you to be better, and it creates an opportunity. And let's say you do have somebody who inevitably just still doesn't put you first. It's up to you whether or not you want to continue that relationship. Obviously, sometimes it's challenging because it might be like your cousin that you see every Sunday. This is where I always challenge people to get very nitty gritty and look at the types of environments you're seeing this person in and what the most realistic outcome is. So they know if I see, you know, I'm going to use the Italian example, my cousin Vinny for only Sunday dinners, this is most likely what's going to happen. He's like, how's your little diet? And he's going to give you a hard time. Is there like an alternative where I can see, like, can I say like, hey, do you want to go on a hike this weekend? And because it's unlikely that maybe he will, he's Italian, like bring up pasta on a hike, but it's unlikely that that's going to happen. Or maybe we can say like, let's go, you know, to a driving range or something. Maybe you can put them without them realizing it, put them in a position to succeed as well. And although it's unfortunate because somebody else's behavior shouldn't be your responsibility, it's also your responsibility to set yourself up for success. So identifying, all right, this person's proving to be very difficult. How can I reduce exposure or change the environment so they're also indirectly put in a position to succeed.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Have you, what I'm getting at here is, how have you learned these things? Like, because it feels like obviously you put some thought into these things. I know you've helped clients with some of these things, but like, what has been most beneficial for you? Has it been like actually real anecdotal, real world experience with these things? Or is it like reading, like, do you like reading books or blogs or podcasts or anything like that? Is there anything like that comes to mind whenever you think about handling things that maybe people could use as like a resource or resources?
Sure. I would say three things came to mind immediately for that, which makes it sound way more complex than it really is. So I'll distill them a bit. Number one would obviously be the unsexy, real world, actionable. I felt role locked in my hometown. I moved somewhere different, did stuff that was absolutely terrifying. So I actually got the at-bats in and got the reps in and developed the skills to then come home, be more of the person I wanted to be, develop the language to ask those people for, you know, the best versions of themselves. So that's the unsexy part, but also the part we can't overlook. I would say number two would be through client interactions. Like I said, I just thought I was going to train these jacked meatheads to go to the NBA. I work with very real people who, you know, might work two or three jobs and they have a not very supportive husband and kids who claim they'll only eat dinosaur chicken nuggets and mac and cheese. So much of it has been close to, I mean, it'll be 10 years next year. So, you know, call it 8 or 9 years now, of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of conversations and trial and error and tinkering of what works, what are people responsive to, what are they not responsive to. So I've been fortunate enough through my clients, as cliche as it sounds, to like the ones who are openly guinea pigs, and they know that, okay, let's try this. Let's see what he says. Let's try this. Let's see if your kid's up for that. And then the big one, and I think the most actionable for other people, would be any sort of mentorship type thing that you can get into. Like, I've done business coaching groups. I've had mentors that don't even really realize they're mentors. It can be like a, you know, from afar, just somebody that you aspire to be like. But that digital environment or that social environment, if you're fortunate enough to connect with these people in person, can almost desensitize you to how challenging these things can be. So if you're consuming information from people who regularly do hard shit, and it's just what they do, it's just part of their day to day, and you're able to socially connect with people who consistently like rewrite their own identity and challenge themselves in new ways compared to maybe the small town you grew up in, or even just your immediate circle that doesn't do that, you get desensitized in a good way. So yeah, I would say that last one, the mentors that I've had, the groups I've been in, whether it's the business coaching groups, the writing coaching groups, where I've met other people, going back to our, you know, social environment, ongoing theme here, that like you can learn from in a way and they push you.
I agree. I think one of the biggest unlocks for me was whenever I did, there was people that I related to. And Mike Vacanti and Jordan Syatt were luckily one of the first ones that I found. Mike especially, just with very similar backgrounds and things. And it's just like whenever I saw somebody who was like doing the things, or at least what I thought I maybe wanted to do and how they were living their life and things like that, I think whenever you find some type of role model or a group of role models and things, even online, can be extremely powerful, right? Because I've met Mike a few times and been with him in person, but it's just like I've spent much more time with him via the internet, right? Mm-hmm. Or like watching these people. I think cultivating that environment online can actually give you that like mental shift that you need to at least take that first step into a pattern interrupt, right? Because I think that's the biggest thing that is just hard for people. They just need a pattern interrupt in their normal lives, right? Like they go to work, they have, you know, or they have families, they have careers, they're doing these things, but then maybe they need an improv class, right? They need to do something that can kind of snap them into this new identity that they're trying to foster, right? And it's just taking that first step and then slowly getting into it. And then, of course, there's going to be people who are going to say things. But again, I think going back to some of the methods that you talked about, it's just like, it's just that's you get the ball rolling, and it's probably you get the ball rolling, and then it snowballs, and then eventually now you're that guy who is X, Y, and Z, right? That people if you can just push through that fire right in the beginning, and just the feedback from people, it's like this is what I was wondering, is if you got maybe posting stuff on social media and things. I just remember whenever I first started posting on social and things, like first my Instagram was just like a normal person's Instagram, right? Mm-hmm. Then I started posting the fitness things, and there's the infographics, and then people would talk shit and make fun of these certain things. And now it's just like, we're doing this. And it's not like I did that stuff to be like, oh, fuck the haters or whatever. But it's just like, you have to have some conviction. You have to have some thick skin and some balls, and like, you have to go for it. And then I think whenever you come out the other side, that's whenever now you've got this new identity, you are this person, right? Because whenever you go back and you see these people in your hometown, it's just like, now you are this person in spite of whatever they say, right? You are that person. And that's powerful. And
you're not as important to them as their comments may suggest. And I mean that in an empowering way. When it's funny, you mentioned the comments, when you make that I'm the fitness guy now kind of, you know, pivot transformation. And the first ever session I did, like, on the books, again, I'd been training people for a couple of years very poorly, but I'd been doing it. The first one where like, my business is now registered. I have my insurance. I have my certification. I have my exercise science degree. I showed up to the house. I knocked in the door all proud. I was training a high school football player. And so I needed his mom's signature for the waiver. And she's a very sweet woman, by the way, I absolutely love her. But we sit down at the table. The first thing she says is, this is such like a nice little cute gig for when you do it for real. And I'm like, you mean for real? Like, and she meant well. It was just like, oh my God, I have to overcome this. You know, I'm a 19-year-old business owner. People aren't going to take me seriously. And I would hear from my friends, from other people in my hometown, like one of my best friends, Dominic, I remember him mentioning like, hey, I was with so-and-so. And she was asking like, when's Sam going to get a real job? And I'm like, what? Like, and fast forward to now, many of those people who made those comments, and I'm not, again, similar to you, I'm not like, fuck the haters, like,
right.
But fast forward to now, these people don't care what I'm doing. And I mean that in a good way. Many of them even reach out for help now at this point. There's just that initial subconscious resistance of somebody else's growth. They're projecting, like, maybe they don't feel like they can, don't even realize this is happening, but maybe they don't feel like they could establish an online business. So they're like, indirectly shutting down somebody else who's trying. But at the end of the day, they're not going to bed like, can you believe Matt ate healthier today? Or can you believe Matt started like, but we operate like that's the case. We leave that interaction thinking like, wow, like they're, you know, they really care, you know, X, Y, and they don't. And I mean that in a good way. Their head is not hitting the pillow, worrying about you foregoing on an appetizer or having the guts to start your own online business. So remember, you're not that important. And I mean that in a freeing way, not a discouraging way.
Dude, that is such a good point. And I love that point because I've said that the same thing multiple times. It's just so true because I'm just like, it is very liberating when you realize people don't give a fuck about you. Like they're just, everybody is living at like they have so many problems that they're dealing with. Like you said, as soon as they make that comment or whatever, again, it's most of the time you can't assume malevolence right off the bat, right? It's usually subconscious, and it's just like they're not thinking of you 20 minutes after you leave, right? You know what I'm saying? It's just like, it's just, they're
not
into something.
20, 2 minutes after they forget they said it. Like.
Exactly. It's just, it is so true. And I think that if more people realize that, it's just, it's almost funny whenever you realize, because it's whenever you realize your own arrogance, kind of, it's like your own ignorant arrogance that you have. And you're just like thinking that, oh, these people care about me. They think about this. And whenever I point that out to certain people who are maybe thinking about doing something similar to us, I'm like, just like, they're not fucking thinking about you. I was like, nobody cares. I promise you, no one gives a shit. Like, just do you and you're going to be happier. And they're still like, they're going to do whatever. Right.
To give one more anecdote to really drive that home. When I started getting tattooed, I grew up in an environment. I went to, you know, private Catholic school. You don't see a lot of heavily tattooed people in that environment. Like when I got one of my first tattoos, this was in high school. I had it was big news in the high school where I went to, and I had a teacher actually come up to me and say, I heard you get a tattoo. I said, yeah, I did. She goes, shame on you. And like, literally, like I went to schools that had nuns, like that, you know, that type of environment where it was just so much back. And at the time, like it really hurt my feelings. Like it really dug deep. I'd see my friend's parents and, you know, they'd make comments like, would you spend on that? Or like, oh, you're not going to regret that one day. Or have you thought about jobs, this, that, the other? And I took it so personally, person after person after person. Fast forward to now, I can assure you that not one person I just mentioned in the last 7 years, 8 years, 9 years, whenever the last time I saw them is, has ever had a fleeting thought for 1 second of their day, like, I wonder how Sam's job prospects are. Like, they don't care. Like, it doesn't cross their mind at all. And it took till now for me to, I want to say now, recently, you know, in this case, when I started getting very heavily tattooed, where I realized when people make comments, they're projecting maybe what their parents taught them, you know, somebody else's insecurities when it comes to tattoos specifically, which if you can't tell, I could do a whole episode on in itself. If somebody's saying like, oh, you won't get a job or it's going to look bad when you're old, that's likely because in their career or like what they're after, that may be a very real possibility. So they're not sitting there and auditing it. If anything, they're running through the lens of their own world, their own learned experiences, their life, and projecting that on you. Same thing for like, it's going to look bad when they're older. They may think that for them with their body, I think I'll look like a cool ass old guy with tons of tattoos. Like, they're like, I don't have to take that to heart so much. And again, we both mean this obviously in a very freeing, encouraging way where nobody gives. And take this to like back to fitness for a second. You walk in the gym and you're like, oh my God, I'm doing hip thrust. People are going to think that's weird. They're too busy looking at their 14 inch biceps in the mirror, you know, or checking to see if they have abs yet. And if they're looking at you, there's a 99% chance it's actually a compliment. Like, oh shit, Matt's squatting 405.
Right.
Besides that, they're disinterested. So take that and run with it in a good way. Like it's, they don't care.
It's like the gym paradox. And I say this too. It's like the funny thing about that, like gym intimidation or whatever, is like everybody is so self-conscious that other people are looking at them, that everybody is just like drowning in self-concern, but nobody is actually paying attention to anybody because everybody thinks that everybody else is looking at them. You know what I'm saying?
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
No, that's it.
No, the person who like is the most confident, maybe is the most muscular or the leanest, who walks around like they own the place.
Yeah.
I assure you that they are so, and this isn't inherently bad, but they are so absorbed in their own workouts and what's getting them there and their bicep peak. That's like the one confident person who may be in the gym is also the least interested in what you're doing. So you're fine.
It's so true. They're the most absorbed usually. Yeah. Usually. Oh fuck, that's funny. You know what? Actually, what I wanted to do, I've never done this before, but I wanted to flip the script on you. You asked me a bunch of rapid fire questions on the end of your so I was on Sam's podcast. I don't know. I might start doing this. People have podcasts, like if they have like a random little segment, I'm about to just like do their segment on them and see how they think about it. So no pressure here with these, but I think that
I'm going to interject briefly to say I have 12 to 15 questions that I rotate between for each guest, and I've never actually prepared my answers for any. So you're hitting me with my own questions, but I'm no more prepared than anybody else to actually answer these.
That'll make it even more fun. Okay, cool. All right, so the first one, you asked me, so what would you be doing if you weren't an expert in health and fitness?
One of two things. I'm going to break my own rules here. Something in the tattoo space. I actually really love drawing, really love art, and used to draw tattoos all the time. I could see myself going all in on that industry, clearly. The other one would actually be working with animals. Like, I'm an animal nut. I think so many of the things that we do here in terms of like
interesting
behavioral change and psychology, like and it's funny, you made a dog analogy on my podcast and said not to compare people to dogs, but I think that's a compliment. So I would say something with animals. And I've always looked at people who work with very large exotic animals, like whether it's a jaguar or a gorilla or something like that. That is so appealing to me. There's so much like energy exchange involved in conditioning, and obviously assuming the animals are well taken care of and, you know, you check those boxes. But yeah, I'm going to cheat and say either something in tattooing or something with animal training or care, but likely like larger exotic animals.
Wow. I was going to say the animal thing caught me off guard, that because that was I hate to keep saying it, that was like off brand. What I was thinking with you, you have this exterior, you have this persona, like just from the outside that I've seen. And it's just like, whenever you said animals, I was thinking of you with like puppies or kittens and things. Then you said exotic animals, and I said, that's more on brand. That's more on brand. You with a fucking tiger.
I have a lion tattoo. I'm looking at my arms and chest right now. I have, you know, lions and boars and duck. Like, I think I have 10 to 12 different animals tattooed. I'm going to get leg sleeves the next few years. Those will have animal themes. So yeah, it's very, very me.
That's incredible. I love it. Okay. If you could teleport anywhere in the world right now, where would you go?
I would say likely the Amazon.
Of course.
I have been to before. It was the first time I left the country like 2 years ago. I went with my buddy Malik. We spent 2 weeks. We spent a little time in the city, which looking back on it now, we regret. Lima, which is, I believe, the capital of Peru. That was like city-esque. But then we went to Cusco, which is a little more villagey. And then we went on like the sketchiest trip through some random third-party website into the Amazon. I thought it was going to be this like big group, very well cured. And fast forward, it ended up being an amazing experience. But Malik and I stayed outside of some like super sketchy hotel in a place called Iquitos, Peru, which when we told a lot of the locals in Lima, like we're going to Iquitos, first thing everyone said is be careful. I'm like, oh, great. What'd we do?
It's not a good sign.
Yeah, not a good sign right away. Within 2 minutes of getting there, we had like our tech. And Peru is wonderful, by the way. I'm not trying to, you know, take a shit on. Peru is wonderful. The people were wonderful. This was unique. We ended up taking this taxi that like, he pretended he wasn't speaking English, took this weird right turn kind of down to an alley to a gas station. Malik and I are like, we're about to have to fight. I think we're about to have to fight. Like something's going to go down here. He tried, like, it just ended up being like all over the place. But so the next day we're waiting for somebody that we only have a first name. We don't have a last name. We don't have a photo. He shows up to the hotel that was also very sketchy that we were waiting in front of. And he's just like, Sam, I'm like, yep. He goes this way. I'm like, I guess this is it. This is what we're doing here. Yeah. And we just followed him. We hopped on. And the little taxis are like motorized bikes, which is like the two-seater attached in the back.
Right, of course.
We couldn't actually take it all the way down to like the little kayak we were supposed to take out. So we had to walk through again, all these alleys. We get on the boat and in like almost complete silence with no, no water and no food, we just spend the next 4 hours in the Amazon River, just like going out. I still don't know where we're sleeping. I still don't know what the itinerary, like, I don't fully understand. No. I'm like, I don't know if we're on the floor, if we're sleeping in a hammock, I don't know. And it ended up being like the most magical 72 hours of my life. The very short version, we saw, you know, we fished for piranhas, caught some, cooked them in a fire. That was our lunch. We saw river dolphin, and this is all in the wild, river dolphins, tarantulas, you know, poisonous. I don't remember if they're, I guess frogs, not toads.
Yeah.
We saw an anaconda. I love huge snakes. So I saw a 3-year-old, I think she was 15-foot anaconda. I was supposed to hold like this 22-foot one, but apparently he hadn't eaten in a few days. So they didn't recommend it. Went to a place called Monkey Island where the monkeys were like people hanging off your arms and legs. And like, I haven't shut up about that trip since, and I haven't stopped thinking about it since.
Wow.
It's a very roundabout way of saying I would go back to the Amazon in a heartbeat and likely spend extended time there.
God, see, part of me like wants to be like, yeah, dude, that sounds awesome. I would love to do that. But the other part of me, the bougie, more like convenient person in me, I'd be like, dude, I would be fucking miserable. And I would be, whenever I'm in it, if I'm in it and I committed, then we're in it, you know, that's it. That like we're committed, we're in this. But yeah, for the most part, if you ask me just like face value, hey, do you want to go do that? I'm just like, I can't, I just, no, I just don't know.
Maybe all the more reason to do it. As you're right. You know, like,
you're right.
I look at, we had 1 hour of Wi-Fi and there was no Wi-Fi. We had 1 hour of electricity per day. We stayed in a little hut just by ourselves in the middle of the Amazon. And our guide, I'm blanking on his name, he was absolutely wonderful, made us feel safe and comfortable the entire time. And then like our actual hike, talk about like roughing it, at least, you know, for us, we go out behind this gentleman, like out of a movie. He has a machete. He barely speaks English. He's just slicing stuff down. That was like the one time it rained. We would get to these little streams that were cutting through the paths we were walking. He would cut down a branch, lay it across and we'd have to tightrope across. And he'd walk across like it was 10 feet wide.
Sure.
Malik and I are like wobbling. We're like, this is how I die. Like this is, and, yeah. And then we would jump to the other side. We jumped to the other side, put our hands on a tree to catch ourselves. There were like little spikes on the tree. So we instantly cut our hands.
Oh, fuck.
Then we found a poisonous frog. Then we found tarantula nests. And the tarantulas were apparently poisonous and very fast. So we're sitting here like, what are we doing? But yeah.
Death. There's death. There's death everywhere. And you're just like, oh, this is great.
Well, you know, the funny part about the tarantula specifically, and I'll wrap it up here. But the funny part about the tarantula specifically was that it was on the way back. So it's pitch black. We don't have any lights. Our guide has one of those little headlamps. So we're just like vaguely following his trail and he was moving very fast. And then he stopped and started like pointing at the ground that there were these little like basically like these little holes that you and I might look at and say, maybe there's a snake or a rabbit or whatever down there. And he lifts the top of it up. And you just see the legs start crawling out of there. I'm like, oh my God. And I don't have like arachnophobia, but it's a tarantula.
You're a human being. It's called evolution. Yeah.
And he picks it up and like and very respectful of the animal, but he like picked up the fangs to kind of show us the teeth and stuff. And we're like, very nice. Very nice. We're like, this is great. And you know, he puts it down. He like repairs the little nest that he had picked up and we keep walking. But again, certainly intense while we were in it, but like literally life changing. I'm like, it was amazing.
You know what's crazy about that shit is just like, what a different life people live. You know what I'm saying? Like, what is that guy doing right now? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just so crazy to me. It's like, this is our jobs. And then there's guys like that who's lifting up tarantulas in the middle of the night with a little light in his head in the Amazon.
We did a little kayak ride in the morning, and there was like a family, and it was like the classic, you know, the mother's bathing the daughter in the river. The dad had what I believe we were told was like a pot for dinner. The son's just playing in the water, where the M is on a river. It's like, it was everything. And they were not part of, to my understanding, like any sort of local village or anything. It was just, they had their hut on the Amazon River, which would be like 20 feet underwater. Like, they had these like tall stilts the house was on. So the areas that they were walking in to access the water would be underwater during the rainy season. And you and I are sitting here thinking of like email subject lines. And I'm like, what
listen,
life?
Listen,
like,
I always joke, we can move on to the next question, but I always joke around with Carter Good whenever I saw him last. I was like, because we saw maybe like people who were like cleaning windows or something on the buildings, like hanging and shit, or like they were building buildings and things. I was like, it's just so crazy. Like, they're over there doing that, and we're getting pissed because we can't like center something on Canva, right? Like, we're trying to center our picture for Instagram, and we're getting pissed about it. We're like, damn it, I can't get the lineup right and make it perfect. And this dude's,
and that's
like
the most frustrating part of our day.
It's you know what? We are lucky. We're lucky for what we do. Okay. Number three, if you could only listen to one artist or band's catalog forever, who would it be?
My immediate thought would be Eminem, but he's not low key enough, for like just work sessions, writing blocks. Cause that's, he has such a huge catalog, and that's who I think like work out, get hype. But, let's see, thinking about this in real time, J. Cole has enough mellow stuff.
You're right.
I'm also a big Chris Brown fan. I don't know if it's off brand, but I love R&B. I listen to a ton of R&B.
I can see it.
And again, he has a huge catalog. Chris Brown or J. Cole. Let's see. I'm actually gonna do Chris Brown, because he has enough collabs with rappers where I could also listen to stuff that like can get up a little bit.
Absolutely.
He has like 47,000 albums, and he's been featured on a billion songs. I'm going to say Chris Brown.
Yeah, I like that. I could agree. I think J. Cole, definitely, for sure. I think J. Cole is definitely up there as well. That's a good one.
That's a coin toss. I might, if you ask me tomorrow, I might say J. Cole.
Right. What's your favorite recent purchase?
This is a tough question, huh? I should know this if I'm asking people.
You had the same, while you think, you had the same exact reaction I did. I was looking around. I was like, is there something I have that I'm like?
I'm a dummy. I bought a car 2 days ago. I've had the same car forever. Yeah, I bought a car 2 days ago, which has been nice. So it's a Toyota Highlander. And I've always had, you know, I don't say little sedans, but, you know, cars that you climb down into. And just the mere fact that I can move like laterally into this car when I climb in has been very nice. I'd say the car.
Hell yeah, I love that. Okay, if you could only have one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Fairly simple, but I would say a gigantic ribeye steak, like the ones that are like ribeye for two on a menu. I'd go with one of those. Something roasted in green. So I'm going to say either like, you know, green beans or broccoli, and then a potato side, like mashed potatoes or French fries or something. Like,
yes,
any slight variation of that I could have breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
I think it was very similar to my, I think I might have said Thanksgiving dinner with my, with my parents. Something like that. But yes, steak, potatoes, a veggie.
Yeah.
You're all set. Okay. Last one. What's the biggest thing you want to accomplish personally or professionally in the next year?
These are tough questions, man.
Hey, you can think yourself.
Let's see. I have a similar answer to you, actually, and not just because I'm talking to you. The answer you gave, for anybody who hasn't listened to you on my show, was that just like doing more of the shit that you enjoy, business or not, just like your average day consists of, and that doesn't mean just like going out on yachts and party, like just very simple stuff. I got outside and played a little basketball, and not doing the things that you don't enjoy. So I would say for me, that crosses both personally and professionally. Professionally, I absolutely love coaching on a very deep level. I am not a here's your macros, good luck coach. I am like a tell me what you're up to this weekend and, you know, how you feel about it and what's going on. So I would say obviously continuing to do that. Outside of that, writing, like I love long form writing articles, that kind of stuff, and then podcasting. So if the bulk of my workday was connecting with people like yourself, just like writing without the distraction of a newsfeed and just coaching the shit out of my clients, I'd say those. And then personally, similar, like, you know, being in a position where I can, you know, enjoy the foods I like to, you know, like to eat and, you know, train the way I want to train. I'm huge into travel. So that kind of stuff, and fairly simple, but yeah, just like doubling down on one side of the list and, you know, axing out the other side.
Yeah. Yeah, Ben. I 100% agree. I feel like we're very, very much aligned on that. I feel like we're the two sides of the same coin. Yours is just much more tatted up than me.
Yeah. That's another thing. If we're talking personally, yeah, I'd love to get both my legs done. I have one rib done. I'd love to do my other ribs. And then actually the entire back of my head and neck is where I'll start next. But I would say that too. That would be wonderful.
We'll have another podcast in the future and you're just going to be one big tattoo. The entire thing, just every single time you'll have new tats. I love
it. It's funny. Friends and family always say like, just don't go below the elbow. And then I go to the wrist. Or, just don't do your hand. And like, not your knuckles. Well, not your other knuckles. Now it's like, just don't do the center of your freaking face. And that's fine. The bar is so low.
That's so true. Just leave some skin, Sam. Come on. That's amazing.
That's fair. Yeah.
That's perfect. All right, dude. This has been wonderful. Let people know where can they find out more about you.
I'd say the best place would actually be my website, which is HerculesPerformance.com. That's where all of my articles are. Even though my podcast, which is called Transformation Talks, is on Spotify and Apple Music or just Apple, whatever, and all that. HerculesPerformance.com. That's how people can get onto my email list, which is where I send most of my stuff, articles, podcast, all the coaching information. I am on Instagram as well, although I take a lot of sporadic breaks. That's at Coach Sam Forge, not forget Forge. So yeah, I'd say those two places would be the best.
Perfect. And I'll put all those links in the description. This has been wonderful, man. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. We're going to chat off air real quick, but yeah, dude, thank you so much for coming on. We'll have to do it again soon.
This is wonderful. Appreciate you having me, brother.
And that is that, my friends. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of the More Than Fitness podcast. And please, if you could help me out a little bit here and leave a rate and review in iTunes, and also take a screenshot and post it up on your IG story. Tag me at MattMcLeod6. I'd love to share it. I'd love to connect with you. I'd love to hear your feedback about the podcast, and also so that we can share the word with other people. I would love to build up this community, build up this tribe of people that we have like you and I, and get the word out there. Also, if you want more free content, you can check the links in the description. I have my free 4-week workout plan, The Ultimate Physique Development. And also, if you want to work with me online, one-on-one for personal coaching, you can check the link in the description as well. And anything else you need, please send me an email, send me a DM. I would love to hear from you. Again, thank you so much for listening.